Okay, does anybody object if we start early and get out early? No? Do I need to see a show of hands there? Everybody still have circulation here? Okay. I'm going to pass out your attendance sheets. And so at the end of the class, can everybody hear me? I feel like I'm not projecting. At the end of the class, Patty will be out there, and she'll take your attendance sheets and your evaluations, all that good stuff. Yes. This was the legislative update material. Got stuck in at the last minute because every time we thought we had an update, you know, the governor would veto something or something would happen. So we waited to the last second to see. Who doesn't have a handout? Most of you. I'll just pass those around as well. But I'm not going to follow this. This is just for your something to hold. I saw Rebecca Stark has the court administrator for the city of Austin has on her on the listserv on the court. Okay, I saw that Friday. How many of you are on the court administrator's listserv? That's where I saw Rebecca has an Excel sheet of tracking legislation. Is that where you found it? Okay. So Rebecca has been following it, and it's a good thing TML, Texas Municipal League, you know, their folks track this. Yes, yeah, right. That's really just something for you to hold on to. This is going to be a really informal session because, as you know, the legislative session or the regular session ended on June 1st. Let me make, how are we doing paperwork-wise? So, one more. Got plenty. A lot of dead trees here. Got one. Y'all don't need one. Anybody else? Okay. Okay. Well, I will pass it out, and like I said, it's just really something so you'll have something in your folder just to clutch onto. I'm not going to follow it, and it's out of date anyway. So, but somebody has the comfort of having that one. It wasn't? Gosh. Did anybody have it? Let me ask that question. Doesn't matter. Nobody had it? All right. Okay, what we're going to talk about in this last session, just to informally go over some of the bills. The legislative session, everything had to go to the governor by June 1st. And usually the law is that if you're going to tack on an amendment, that your amendment to a bill has to be relevant. Well, they were so backed up and so far behind that they tacked random. The rule that it had to be relevant was waived. And so there is random. Sorry, ladies, we started a couple minutes early. Random stuff attached to bills. It might be a bill on home health care or just totally unrelated stuff. So we're having to go through all of these bills and we find little court costs tacked here and there that are totally unrelated. So that's why I don't have a formal handout for you because it just changes all the time. What we're going to do is we do the our newsletter is going to have the legislative update, and we are going to be going to the have that printed, I believe, the second week of July. So don't panic that you're leaving here without written materials on the update. I'll have you take notes on a couple of these bills because they are going. I tried to put these in some order that they're going to most affect you as clerks and administrators of your courts. But we will be getting the recorder out, and then the legislative updates are going to be available for, they'll be online mid-July. So that said, let me just highlight a couple of bills that are going to affect you sooner rather than later. I mean, here it is, just 2 years after you think it's safe to get back in the water, you finally figured out these new court costs go where and what happens when, and it's just fruit basket turnover. We start all over again. So here's one that it's not going to rock your world, but it's going to affect all of your courts. The Senate Bill 1145 amends the government code, and we now have a state law which tells us how the Texas flag is going to be folded. So I imagine everybody's got a flag in their court. And here, don't need to write this down, but when you get your legislative update, you can instruct your bailiffs how it's to be done. You're going to fold the flag in half lengthwise with red stripe facing upward. Fold the flag in half lengthwise once more, concealing the red stripe on the inside of the fold. Position the flag with the white star facing downward and the blue stripe facing upward. Fold the corner with the white stripe to the opposite side of the flag to form a triangle. Continue folding the corners over in triangles till the resulting fold produces a blue triangle with a portion of the white star visible. Secure all edges into the folds. Yes, sir. You know, I don't think I have any more, and I'm not following that. Like I said, it's out today. It's out of date. That is to follow along. I can get you one. If you'll give me your email address, I'll give you one, but it's out of date. Does anyone at your table have one? Well, let's get you one. Okay. All right. We got to at least have one for comfort here. Yes, ma'am. If you've got one in the front of your binder, that's what we're talking about. Thank you. I thought some of them got passed out. So did everybody follow how we fold that flag? Y'all got it down? Thank goodness for the Texas legislature. But I don't know how we've been doing it. That is Senate Bill 1145. This is one that's going to affect us in. And we need to know that this is the law, and of course it's a matter of respect. Probably the biggest one, when we do the legislative updates, we do summaries, and then we have TMCEC commentary. Well, my commentary on this bill is that Ryan Turner has worked at TMCEC long enough to see everything. This is something that, you know, he said would never happen, that the common word on the street, the basic understanding was that municipal judges were never going to be able to perform marriage ceremonies. Yay, now it has happened. The JP lobby did not resist it. They didn't take a position on this. So now, in addition to every other type of judge, municipal judges can now perform marriage ceremonies September 1st. Anybody have any plans in your respective courts? Have your judges been, you know, thinking, all right, here goes my income doubled? There's a JP, every Valentine's Day, there's a story on the 6 o'clock news. The JP, Jan Breland, performs wedding ceremonies, and they make six figures. The JPs pull in six figures in some places to supplement their income. So when I grow up, I'm going to run for JP. But I didn't know. So nobody's judges? Nobody's got any plans?
True.
No plans?
I'm still going to send them to my husband.
Okay. Really? Well, at least it's in the family there. I've got four adult kids. None of them are married, and I've told them that I was available for a good price. But then they'd move in with me. So that's a big bill that went through. It's not going to affect our day-to-day operations for most of us. Here's a big one. Let's write this one down. Again, you're going to get this in the recorder. But here's one that you might start considering changing your forms now. It involves juror exemptions. It's House Bill 319. It's effective September 1st. And the government code, when it lists the exemptions for juror service, says that if you've got, if a person is taking care of a child, or a child would be unattended under the age 10 and younger, then that person could claim an exemption from jury service. Well, the legislator here that introduced this bill realized that the law says if you leave a kid unattended under the age of 15, then you can be charged with endangerment of a child. So here we're going to make you be a juror if you're taking care of someone under the age of 15, but then you could be charged with a criminal offense. So in your juror summons letters or your exemption forms, the age to claim an exemption if you're taking care of a child is no longer 10, it's 15. So everybody's paperwork might make a note, and this will be effective September 1st. I know in small courts you're probably already looking at, I know in Liberty Hill we don't have a jury trial, but maybe once every 3 months. So we're going to start working on our paperwork there. That's significant. All right, here's another one that's going to impact us all. House Bill 666. So y'all are familiar with the court cost in 102.021 that provides for the $50 warrant fee. Everybody. So this is some cleanup language. We've got this $50 warrant fee in there, and we've got a $50 fee court cost for capiases, but it doesn't say capias pro fine. So this is just cleanup. Now they've amended the government code, and so it's including $50 for a capias pro fine. Now, this act goes into effect September 1st, but that's what the legislature said. We've got a provision in the government code, section 51607, that says if you're going to introduce any new fee, if the legislature passes a new fee, that they don't take effect until January 1st, 2010. So as if you didn't have enough to keep up with, here we've got a new court cost, but, you know, put an asterisk there, and you can start charging that court cost on January 1st. There's some kind of ambiguous language in this bill as well. There's language that says, well, we want to raise the court cost on Class B misdemeanors from $50 to $60. And so they amended two bills, but then they added another section that says, well, we're going to raise the cost from $50 to $60 for offenses, and it includes several different codes, and one of them is Chapter 49 of the Penal Code, and that's got public intoxication in it. And I think I saw, and I may be wrong, but I think in Rebecca's Excel spreadsheet on this, she says that this court cost doesn't apply to us. Does she say that? Because I think their intention was that it applied to B misdemeanors. Which one? Okay, so she's made a note that she thinks that this is just applying to Class B misdemeanors and up. Well, they've amended two sections of the code, and one of them raises cost from $50 to $60 for offenses in Chapter 49 of the Penal Code, and we handle those offenses. So whether or not their intent was that this court cost be raised, at one point that was taken out of the bill and it was put back in, so you could argue that obviously it was not their intent that it just apply to Class B misdemeanors. But we'll talk about that more, and we've got time to get materials to you on that before this $10 increase in the court cost goes into effect. What I will keep an eye on our website, because that's the first place that these updates are going to come to you, and you'll have something to, some reference other than me telling you right now. All right, this is the one that's going to blow your mind. I know I've heard you talking about it. Just blow your mind. It blows my mind. We're literally being nickeled and dimed. Okay, so everybody know, anybody know what T-close is? I didn't know till I took this job. T-close is the Texas Commission on Law Enforcement Officer Standards and Education. So this is a massive bill involving T-close. And it has training requirements in here. It's got records and audit requirements in here. There's new language about racial profiling, the steps that an officer has to take and the documentation that you have to take. It's a collection of information. Well, so this bill was going merrily along, and then, in fact, the legislative summary doesn't address what rocks our world, is that it went into a committee, I think, on May 28th, so 2 days before the drop-dead time. And I guess somebody in the Senate committee said, well, how are we paying for this new program that we've implemented? And so they have added a 15-cent court cost. Now, maybe we look too hard for some of these court costs. I don't know if anybody would have noticed if we didn't collect it. But the good news is, okay, you've got to collect this 15 cents, and I've already heard some of you talking about, well, I'm going to get with my judge, and the fine is going to be $100.15. I can just imagine this is going to be a real pain to deal with. You know, change, or I can't see that it's not going to cost more than 15 cents to administer this. But the good news is, and I know this is going to help make up for it, is that the city gets to retain 1 cent of this 15 cents. So life, you know, it's all good.
Which number is that one?
That is Senate Bill. Senate Bill 3389. And it's like 40 pages, and on page 39, that big, says 15-cent court cost. Anybody here from El Paso? There's a new court cost, and it just affects El Paso. I'm going really fast, so I can't let y'all out too early, or I'll get in trouble with the boss. Anybody got any questions? Let me ask that. They're going, oh, crap, they're talking to you. All right, there's a new court cost that just affects El Paso. We'll pass on that. Anybody here from Austin? We'll pass on that. This is an interesting bill. It's going to change things up in municipal court. Are any of you licensed court interpreters, or have you tested for that? One? You got grandfathered. Okay. Two? All right. Were you grandfathered in as well? I had no idea how tough it is to become a licensed court interpreter. Native Spanish speakers are not passing this test. People that have been in the court system for years and years and are fluent in Spanish are not passing this test. Well, that's creating quite a problem with the availability of court interpreters. So House Bill 4445 has created kind of a two-tiered system. What the legislative notes say, and I'll read this to you, is that according to the Office of Court Administration, more than 4 million cases were filed in county and Justice of the Peace courts during 2008. Due to the basic nature of these courts, many of the cases the courts handle are misdemeanor offenses where the punishment consists of a fine or civil claims where the amount in dispute is no more than $10,000. As a result, Texas licensed court interpreters are overwhelmed by cases that do not require their level of expertise. So basically in JP courts and municipal courts, we don't need that level of expertise. I guess they've determined to understand the concepts or translate. But what they've done is they're going to administer the same court interpreter test. And there's going to be a master's level and a basic level. So it's the same test, and if you make an A, I guess you're a master's, and if you make a C, you're going to be a basic. But it's going to designed to make it easier to get court interpreters in our courtroom. They've just passed this law, and so it's up to the commission to design all the rules and regs and the test and get the basics down. But that's going to come down the pike for us eventually. And how many of you have licensed court interpreters on your staff? Just one, two, three courts, four. Okay, that's good news. It's difficult for these small towns that don't have someone nearby. This next bill. See how fast I'm going. 13. We started about 10 minutes early. This next bill affects the, how many of you have school crossing guard programs? Really? Nope. Well, you can get money for that in the Child Safety Fund. It goes to a crossing guard program. That's where that money is supposed to go. And the legislature realized that, yes, it's a good idea to collect money in the Child Safety Fund, but at some point you may have more money than you need for a school crossing guard program. So now they have given us discretion. They have broadened the scope of this Child Safety Fund that it doesn't have to go to this crossing guard program. So if y'all are collecting that fee and you don't have that program, we won't tell anybody right now, but it has now been expanded so that the excess money or the money you collect can go to anything that enhances public safety and security. So that's a good bill. I think that, you know, it doesn't do us any good to go to the expense to collect these funds, and it's supposed to make it more safer for children in our community, but it's of no use to us. Here's one affected the Gulf Coast areas this last year. I know some courts had their courtrooms, their buildings totally swept away in a disaster in the hurricane. This one won't affect our day-to-day operations, but it's a bill that allows the Supreme Court to modify or suspend court rules during a disaster. So if the governor declares a disaster and there's a certain way when we've got to hold court or deadlines or, you know, 10 days that can't be waived, things like that, I don't know how it will apply, but the Supreme Court can send down a missive that we can suspend these rules. And hopefully we don't need to use that. Here's one that isn't going to be of too much interest to judges, I don't think, but hopefully it will affect some of you as clerks. How many of you have worked for your city more than 10 years? How about more than 15 years? Okay. In a general law cities, as you know, a home rule city has a charter, and so a home rule city has authority to self-govern somewhat. But if you're a smaller city, if you're a general law city, then all your authority you have to find, it has to be given to you by the legislature. And so the AG issued an opinion in 1990, so the legislature is on top of this one, that said that they don't find any authority for a general law city to provide longevity pay for clerks or for city employees, basically. And so if you're a general law city and your cities wanted to reward your service, there was no authority to give you longevity pay. Well, now that there is now that authority, and hopefully you all will be getting raises if you're in a small town. That's a big whoop for that one. This is an interesting one that, any questions? Y'all can slow me down. I know that some of you want to go home. Yes, ma'am.
They're wondering if that longevity is going to be retro back.
We wish. 15-cent court costs, but no retroactive longevity pay. I don't know if your city wanted to do that. Right, maybe we can get a penny court cost for longevity pay. In addition to longevity pay, it also, so it's going to affect more of you than I gave it credit for, cost of living increases too. So I don't know if the cities were not giving raises because they knew they didn't, their city attorneys were saying, no, you don't have the authority to do that. But now it's official. You've got that authority. This always threw me off, this statute in the transportation code, 720.022, this is Senate Bill 420. The provision in the transportation code that says we can't have quotas, you can't have traffic quotas, the judge can't consider how much money this is going to bring in. Y'all, anybody not familiar with that statute? You know, can't do it. That makes sense. That's all good. But subsection C of that provision said, however, a city council or a governing body can consider the revenue that the court brings in and evaluating the judge's performance. Well, dang. You know, that sure sends a mixed message. That subsection C that says that the city council, the governing body, can consider the revenue sources, the amount of money that municipal court generates, that section has been repealed. So I think that's good news. I don't see how ethically that was going to play. Does anybody... who has a city council here that puts pressure on you for the amount of revenue generated? Anybody here get any pressure from their city councils? Pardon? Your finance director? City administrator? Anybody else? No pressure?
No.
That would be illegal. That would be unethical, that would interfere with judicial independence. I actually interviewed for a job, I won't say what city, they were looking for a municipal court and judge, and they said that they needed money, they weren't generating the revenue, and what did I think about that? And I cited the Constitution, and they didn't call me back. But that was the gist of the entire interview, is we're not bringing in enough money. Our cops aren't working hard enough. We're on this highway. So it's something that I think is a constant pressure that you have to deal with in municipal courts. And we hope that we've gotten enlightened and educated city governing body. But it's a fact of life, too. So officially, judges cannot be evaluated for the revenue they bring in. This one, I'm just going to tell you about. It doesn't affect us. Juror reimbursement. They've changed the ways that jurors can be reimbursed in county and district courts. We don't pay our jurors unless you've got a city ordinance. Anybody here pay their jurors? A lot of you. What city are you with?
Abilene.
Okay. How big a city is that? 900, and you pay your jurors. All right. What are my other hands? Big city? Right. What city are you from? Okay. I know you guys. I know you guys. Big city or big court. Okay. So I don't often hear that the smaller cities are paying their jurors. Well, they've changed the way that you can reimburse the jurors. Apparently, it was some tedious process that you couldn't use credit cards, but that's been changed. So this definitely falls in the nice-to-know category as opposed to the need-to-know category. Does anybody here have regional drug courts? Regional drug courts? All right. If you get one, it used to be that for smaller municipalities, rural areas, that they needed a drug court, but they're just not big enough to support one. Three cities or three counties could get together and establish one. Well, that wasn't getting the job done, so they've changed it, and now two cities could get together and establish a regional drug court. Any cities here have their own alcohol, certified breath alcohol testing program? Bigger cities? Dickinson? Okay. How big a city is that? All right. So one city does. Probably I know my bigger cities do. The deal is with the, it costs money to run your own alcohol testing program. But in all the court costs we're collecting, we can't take any money for that. Now, so they've added that out of this consolidated fee, if you operate your own certified alcohol testing program, then you can keep $22.50 of this court cost. And that's good news. But it's on convictions other than Class C misdemeanors. So for our alcohol-related offenses, you know, we may be running this program and paying someone to run the test, but in our courts, we're not going to be able to collect it. However, it is good news for you cities that operate an alcohol testing program, because at least that is going to bring revenue in for your county offenses. So that will bring in some money. It's just not a court cost that we're going to be collecting in municipal court. Okay, well, this one's pretty random. Anybody here, and I think it was Judge Ramsey's court. Does anyone have a judge who's the judge has ordered as a condition of deferred to put a GPS or some device, monitoring device on them? I think Tyler does it. Nobody here has a judge do that? It's expensive. But this House bill, it says that you can order that a magistrate, and we're talking about magistrates here, can order as a condition of bond that you get GPS on the defendant. The practical effect of that, the cost to the defendant, would be significant. I don't know how many folks were going to bond out of jail on a Class C misdemeanor that are going to want to pay hundreds of dollars to be monitored for their Class C misdemeanor. So practical application in our courts, probably not. This one could potentially affect us. Am I going too fast? It gets long. You know, your brain can only absorb so much and just kind of turns to goo after a while. That's why you've got these nice big notebooks you can refer back to and resources in there. But prosecution of family violence. This creates a new offense that if you have been convicted two or more times for any offense that involves domestic violence, then we've created a new crime, sort of like a serial family violence person. And this, it's a new offense. So some of the cases that we've seen, if they've been convicted two or more times, are not going to be Class C misdemeanors. They could be Class B misdemeanors. This is something that the prosecutors and the police officers, y'all aren't going to be frontline on this one. They will be. Okay. Here's what's the statute of limitations on Class C misdemeanors? Okay. Of course it's 2 years. We can't. I think that statute of limitations, 2 years on a Class C misdemeanor, I think 99% of us think that. But when you look at the statute, when it's talking about statute of limitations, talks about upon the issuance of indictment and felonies or information. It doesn't use the word complaint. So this is one that is going to impact your courts. There's two bills, Senate Bill 413 and 415, that lay to rest any debate about what the statute of limitations is. In order to toll the statute of limitations, you've got to file the complaint. And the filing of the complaint is going to toll the statute of limitations. I saw one article where Dallas County had warrants. They were trying to collect an enormous amount of money. Anybody here from Dallas County? The county was trying to collect all this $20 million, but they were looking at 20-year-old warrants. So my question was, do they really have complaints on all of those cases? I'm thinking they probably don't. And if you've got a citation out there that and you've got a warrant on this citation and it's more than 2 years old, the statute of limitations has told on that. So that brings up all kinds of complicating issues, like if you report it to Omni. Any of you report to Omni without having first issued the complaint? You know, you've got a citation. Is everybody, before you report to Omni, you've got a complaint filed?
We don't even do a warrant before a complaint comes across the desk.
I'm sorry?
Okay,
and that's the better practice, that you don't issue a warrant until that complaint is filed. So this is this settles some business, saying that the complaint tolls it. Also, okay, the other bill says that if you've got a defendant, and it takes care of this problem on the warrants, if you've got a defendant that fails to appear, then you've got to file a complaint there. And enter a plea. Let me read this commentary. Many courts already file complaints when the defendant does not appear pursuant to the terms of the citation. So this is another bill that makes law conform to common practice. Some courts out there are issuing warrants based on citations alone. They're trying to arrest folks on the basis of these warrants, and you've just got a citation and you don't really have a valid offense out there. So that could be potentially bring some liability to your cities. Well, that... I don't think the question is, you've got your complaint filed and you've got a warrant. How long is that warrant good? I think it's good. I mean, there is no statutory.
I always argue that police department.
I think that if you've got an ancient one, I'd be cautious about it if I were trying to execute that, because, you know, make sure that it's still valid. But there is no expiration date. They've got unfinished business in your court. And you've already filed your complaint and made. We get calls, especially from smaller cities, and just the range of what we're dealing with. I've been hearing the technology that some of you all utilize, and in Liberty Hill we've got a folding table, no bench, no nothing. It's the old laundromat. So the range of what we're dealing with is. Just pretty extreme. Some of you wear every hat in your court, and others of you have very narrowly described job descriptions. But it's all the same law. We get calls on our 800 line. A judge comes in and says, well, the judge for the last 30 years has retired, and I'm in his office, and I'm opening the desk drawers, and there are all these citations there. And there's sticky notes or something stapled that still owes $20. And how do I take care of that? It's a mess to inherit, but I have talked on the phone trying to discourage many judges to not just do a big roundup of the town folk and for a sticky note that says still owes $20 on a 10-year-old case. All right, well, I've jabbered quickly through this. I still don't see any objections to going home early, but there's just tons of, we're tracking hundreds of bills, and what I just wanted to call to your attention today to be on the lookout for is we're going to have to, you know, your software, I guess, Encode and the other ones you use, this 15-cent one, what were they thinking? I think that that's going to be a software nightmare and mess for you guys. But then there aren't all that many new court costs. The increase, the capias pro fine is now included in the court cost. And I think that we have, if it's a public intoxication, oh, I know one I didn't tell you about, substantive law-wise. Let me tell you one more. The public intoxication, that was an offense that we didn't have, let me see, this piece of paper I told you all about wasn't relevant. Public intoxication, we didn't have jurisdiction for anyone under the age of 17, and now we have jurisdiction. Municipal courts now have jurisdiction on the public intoxication of children. I think it does. What have I done? I had this starred. You already found it? 550. I believe it does. What else? I don't want you to get away without knowing what you need. 5, okay. It does it say when it's goes? Is anybody going to one of our legislative updates? We do have an 8-hour class on this. Where are y'all going? To in Austin? Okay. Well, you will just get 8 hours worth in Austin. I think that disabled parking here. All right. I'll end with this one. That is on page 12. If you've got the handout. And if you'd like a handout, if you didn't get one, I can print one out here. I don't want anybody to go home empty-handed. So see me afterwards, and I'll get you a copy of this. But on page 12, disabled parking, this is an odd one to me. It makes it sort of like a compliance dismissal. If the analogy was that if you have an expired inspection sticker and you go bring proof that you've taken care of it, then it's a compliance dismissal. Here, if you are parking in disabled parking and you get a ticket and the placard has been expired for less than 60 days, or the person who gets the ticket comes in with a placard within 20 days, then you dismiss the offense. So I guess that's good news. I don't know if that defeats the intent of the statute itself, but that's in the nature of a compliance dismissal, and you'll be dealing with that too. I can talk to you about golf carts on the beach. Anybody need to know about that right this minute? No? Okay. So get your evaluations and all your paperwork together. I will alert Patty to be at the door and take all of that. Any questions? No. All right. Thank you very much. Everybody get safely home. Okay. Let me give you one. I don't know. I should have asked everybody to check their front pocket because I did a bunch of them. I just had it in my hand. Follow me out here and I'll do it. I can take some of these. Does Patty know? I didn't give her any warning. She usually has a box. You hold on. Okay, is she there? All right, I'll let. Come see me if you need a copy of that handout. Yeah, Patty, I was short handouts. I think some people had them in their pocket but didn't know it. Be in my hand. Maybe I left it up there. No, it's my book. Yeah, I'm supposed to be getting a copy of the handout for this lady, but if you can stay just a minute, I had that handout in my hand and now.